Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the BT Center Auditorium and to BT's results presentation. Can you please make sure that you have all mobile devices switched off? There are no fire alarms planned for today, and in the event of an alarm sounding, would you please leave the auditorium by the two fire exits at the front of the room? Before we start, we need to draw your attention to the usual disclaimer on forward-looking statements. Please see this slide and our latest annual report and Form 20-F for examples of the factors that can cause actual results to differ from any forward-looking statements we may make.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our full-year results presentation. I think we have delivered another strong performance this year with good growth in profit and cash flow. The board is actually really pleased with the progress the company has made this year, both in terms of financial performance, but also the major milestones that have been achieved. We have agreed a pension valuation, we have secured more Topsports content, and we have announced the acquisition of the E. The most significant overall investment we have made over the last several years has been in fiber broadband. This investment is transforming the U.K. and has been a real success story for both the country and BT. Our superfast network is now available to more than three-quarters of the country. We are expanding into rural areas and are working with government to help take fiber coverage to 95% of the country. We have been able to commit to this investment by exercising strong financial and operational discipline. We are on budget and ahead of schedule. This is a multi-year program, and it will still be a number of years before Openreach recovers its costs. Being part of a larger group gave Openreach the confidence in future to demand to start significant investments at a time when the U.K. was in the depths of a recession. We will continue to invest as we announced in January. We will be upgrading broadband speeds from superfast to ultrafast, but we can only do this if we have the right investments and regulatory environment. There have been suggestions that Openreach should be separated from the rest of BT. This is short-sighted and would be highly disruptive to the U.K. market. It would stifle investment in both networks and service, and it would risk the U.K. being left behind, destabilizing what is a buoyant internet economy. It is absolutely critical that we continue with the current structure, which has stimulated investment and competition, with consumers benefiting from high speeds and low prices. The U.K. now has the highest coverage of fiber broadband of any of the major European countries and well above the European average of 62%. Ofcom itself has found Britain to have the lowest broadband prices amongst the major Western economies. We welcome Ofcom's review into digital communications and will be making these points very clearly. This review provides a great opportunity to modernize the regulatory regime to make sure the industry can rise to the needs of the customers and drive economic growth and support social progress for the whole country. Ofcom needs to remove regulations where competition is effective and make long-term commitments so that communications providers can invest with confidence. We continue to push for a more level regulatory playing field within the European Union and across the world so that we can compete more effectively. Another major investment that we announced this year is our proposed acquisition of E. I'm pleased that our shareholders voted overwhelmingly in favor of the deal last week. Combining E with BT will allow us to secure and accelerate our mobile strategy, offering new and innovative services for U.K. consumers and businesses and delivering value for customers and shareholders. We've continued to invest in customer service, and we are seeing the benefits. We're providing our services faster and repairing them quicker when they go wrong. But there is still much to do, and this will remain a priority. In the U.K., we are one of the largest investors in research and development. Globally, we continue to invest in our networks to support large multinational companies. We've also invested in our people. They contribute in many ways, and I'm proud that we have a strong volunteer ethos throughout the company. More than one in four BT people volunteered this year, giving a combined 53,000 days of their time and helping almost 4,000 charities in total. And we raised more than £80 million for good causes. And importantly, of course, we have also looked to reward our shareholders. The board is recommending a final dividend of 8.5p, full-year dividend of 12.4p, up 14%. This growth rate is towards the top end of our guided range, reflecting the strong cash we generated this year. We are very confident in our plans and our future cash flow growth. And as such, we are maintaining our guidance to 10 to 15% growth in the dividend per share for next year, and we will continue to pay a progressive dividend beyond that. This year, we spent £320 million on our share buyback, and we will continue to buy back shares this coming year, again spending around £300 million to help offset the dilution from the employee share options. In summary, this has been a very important year for BT. Our results show that our investments are delivering for the business. We will continue to invest to grow the company and deliver for our customers, communities, and our shareholders. And I'll now hand over to Tony, who will take you through the financials before Gavin goes through the lines of business and an update on our strategy. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike, and good morning, everyone. Our results for the year were in line with or ahead of the outlook that we announced at the start of the year. We made further progress with our cost transformation, and there's more to come. We've delivered strong growth in profit and cash flow, and as a result of the strong performance, our free cash flow outlook for next year has increased. So, first of all, slide 9. This shows how the full year results compared with the outlook we gave. Underlying revenue, excluding transit, declined 0.4%, which is in line with our outlook of broadly level with 13-14. On EBITDA, we said at the start of the year that we expected to be between 6.2 and 6.3 billion, and we came in towards the upper end of that range. Normalised free cash flow of 2.83 billion has materially exceeded our outlook of about 2.6 billion. And I'll explain shortly some of the moving parts. Lastly, as Mike said, our dividend came in towards the top end of our 10 to 15% outlook. So it's a good set of numbers right the way across the board. Moving on now to a brief overview of the quarter four results on slide 10. Underlying revenue, excluding transit, was down to 1.3%. This mainly reflects decline in UK public sector revenues in global services, which more than offset the benefit of circa £30 million from ladder pricing revenues, which wholesale recognised in quarter four. EBITDA was up 7%, our best performance in a number of quarters, as ladder revenues and the benefit of our cost transformation programmes offset the pressure on the top line. Underlying operating costs, excluding transit, reduced by 6%. This compares well with a 3% decline last quarter. Per EBITDA, we continue to see the benefits of our focus in recent years on debt reduction. This has led to low interest charges, which contributed to an 11% increase in our EPS. Normalised free cash flow was down £79 million. This was mainly driven by higher cash capex and working capital movements, which offset the growth in EBITDA. Net debt is now £1.9 billion lower than a year ago, reflecting both the cash generation of the business and the £1 billion share placing we did in February. Slide 11 gives a breakdown of specific items. Excluding pension interest and tax, the overall charge in the year was £235 million, and this is broadly in line with consensus. But within that, there are a number of moving parts. Firstly, we recognise a net credit of around £750 million from various regulatory rulings and decisions. These all relate to previous years and include a £128 million benefit from ladder pricing following the Supreme Court judgment in July in our favour, and commercial negotiations also with the mobile operators. We've also sold a large property in London. This was an old international exchange which we no longer need and which we sold to a property developer, making a profit of £67 million. This was partly offset by a £45 million increase to onerous lease provisions. Our total restructuring costs came in at £315 million for the year. This was higher than our plans at the start of the year, mainly because of our restructuring program was more successful than we anticipated, with more people taking leave packages, particularly in quarter four. This helped our cost base a bit in the year and will have a bigger impact next year. The main elements of our group-wide restructuring program have come to an end, and we don't expect to recognise any restructuring costs two specific items next year. But our cost transformation programs will continue, and we expect to incur around 100 million of lever costs in 15-16. However, we'll be now taking this through EBITDA and absorbing it in our guidance, as I will show shortly. Turning to slide 12. Looking at our revenue trend for the last 5 years, we've made strong progress towards the goal of delivering sustainable and profitable revenue growth. This has been driven by the investments we've been making, particularly in cyber and sport. Slide 13 shows a walk from last year's revenue to this. Regulation in wholesale and Openreach continue to be a significant pressure on our business. As we flagged at the start of the year, we'd expected to see declines in UK public sector revenue this year due to fewer milestones, the ending of our two local government contracts, and lower government spending in general. This accounted for most of the decline within global services. The termination of the post office contract within wholesale has been a headwind throughout the year, but will have no further impact from quarter one onwards. These three disclosed headwinds account for most of the pressures on our top line in the year. Offsetting these declines, consumers delivered strong revenue growth, driven by higher broadband and TV revenue, reflecting the benefit of BT Sport. Excluding the impact of regulation, Openreach has also seen strong growth, driven by increased demand for both fibre and Ethernet. As you can see on slide 14, we continue to deliver on our cost transformation program. Operating costs in total were down 600 million, a 5% reduction. Underlying operating costs, excluding transit and sports rights, have reduced by 4%. The restructuring program I referred to previously was one of the key enablers in reducing our gross labour costs by 4% in the year, despite the impact of insourcing around 2,000 jobs during the course of last year. Moving on to slide 15, I'd like to give you some examples of our transformation activity over the year. We've continued to be successful in improving the effectiveness of our contact centres, partly by improving the effectiveness of our processes and partly through rationalisation to create critical mass within each centre. In fact, we still have over 100 centres which are subscale. I believe we'll be able to generate around £70 million of savings next year in this area. It's worth noting that we continue to invest in improving customer service, and we've created 500 new jobs in this area this year. Next, we have a major program on improving sales effectiveness across the business. This is targeted at reducing the level of support staff, refocusing and incentivizing sales teams on high-margin activities, and replicating top quartile performance across the sales base. We would expect £35 million of future benefit from this program, some of which will be reinvested in increasing sales resource. Lastly, on a number of occasions, I've given you an update on our travelling subsistence. By continuing to take a forensic approach in this area, we've been able to reduce our cost base from £102 million to £87 million this year, a saving of £15 million, and with more to come next. So, these are just a few examples. We have a lot more opportunities for cost savings over the next few years. Our success in cost transformation and margin improvement can be seen clearly on slide 16. This shows our EBITDA performance over the last 5 years. While underlying revenue excluding transit was broadly flat this year, cost transformation has allowed us to grow EBITDA by 3%. EBITDA was £50 million above consensus, and reflects both an improved trading performance as well as the benefit around £30 million of ladder pricing. This dollar growth has contributed to very strong cash flow. You can see this on slide 17. This year is nearly £400 million higher than last year and £750 million higher than 4 years ago. Slide 18 shows the driver of this year's free cash flow growth. Cash flow was up £380 million year on year, of which £155 million was due to growth in EBITDA. A further £246 million was driven by favourable movements in working capital and other, partly reflecting both the timing of sports rights payments and as well as lower ordinary pension payments. We also benefited from lower tax and interest payments. These positives offset the offset that we had on higher cash capex due to the timing of receiving the BBK grant funding. This is only received after each network milestone is completed, and therefore can be variable in timing. Turning now to debt on slide 19. Net debt is down $1.9 billion in the year. This reflects both the strong cash generation of the business and the £1 billion equity placing as part of the financing for the EU transaction. At March 2015, the group had cash and current investment balances of $3.9 billion. We also have committed undrawn facilities of over £5 billion, which includes a committed acquisition facility for the EU transaction. As I've said before, we'll continue to target a BBB+ rating. Now, moving on to pension on slide 20. In January, we announced the result of the triennial valuation. We agreed a 16-year payment plan with £2 billion being paid over the first 3 years, of which we've already paid £1.5 billion. We're paying £250 million in each of 15-16 and 16-17. The IS19 deficit was £6.1 billion net of tax, compared with £5.6 billion the year before. The increase in the deficit principally reflects the fall in the real discount rate, partly offset by higher investment returns and also the deficit payment we made in March. However, since the year end, the deficit has improved to around £5.3 billion as at the 30th of April, reflecting the payment we made in April, and reduced liability due to an increase in the real discount rate. Lastly, there are three quick things for your models. Because of the fall in the discount rate in 15-16, the pension operating charge will increase by around £20 million next year. The net pension interest expense in specific items will reduce from £292 million to around £225 million. And lastly, due to the timing of payments and to reflect the latest funding agreement, the cash ordinary contributions will be around £90 million higher next year. Moving on to our outlook, I'm going to walk you through our EBITDA and then cash flow for next year, as there are a number of moving parts. So starting with EBITDA on slide 21. Firstly, we'll have a lower benefit from ladder pricing. All ladder pricing will cease from the end of June. So in 15-16, we expect to recognise only half of what we recognise this year. As I mentioned, the pension operating charge will increase next year by around £20 million. It is not a cash item. This year we had another £29 million benefit from selling redundant copper from our coal network, but we don't expect any further benefit from this next year. And finally, there will also be the £100 million impact from lever costs coming above the line. These four effects will have a combined impact of around £170 million on our EBITDA. And this summer, we'll also be launching our Champions League coverage, for which we'll have launch costs and begin expensing the rights. However, offsetting these headwinds, we expect to benefit from the acceleration of our cost transformation programs, which have been helped by the extra restructuring we did in 14-15. We also expect our investments to drive revenue growth, which will support our EBITDA performance. Excluding the £170 million, this would imply that the EBITDA growth will be in the 3% range. Overall, we expect to deliver modest EBITDA growth for 15-16 versus 14-15. Next, let me walk through next year's free cash flow outlook on slide 22. We'll have the same impact from ladder pricing, copper sales and levers, as I just mentioned. Our ordinary pension contributions will be around £90 million higher. However, interest payments will be lower due to lower net debt. Overall, the after-tax impact of these effects combined is a headwind of around £170 million. Offsetting this will be a net improvement in the other elements of cash flow, principally from trading. So overall, we expect our cash next year to be around £2.8 billion. Look, while we were previously guiding for growth, this was off a much lower base. Overall, our expectation for cash in 15-16 has gone up materially. It's also worth noting that consensus for 15-16 cash flow is around £2.7 billion. So So our now, you know, the new outlook we've got now would imply an upgrade of around 4p. Finally, slide 23 summarises our overall outlook and notes that this is for standalone BT, excluding EE. It's worth saying that even if we start consolidating EE before the year end, we'll also report performance against outlook on this basis, so you'll have like-for-like performance. I've spoken about EBITDA and cash flow. On revenue, our goal is to drive sustainable, profitable revenue growth, and we continue to expect growth in underlying revenue, excluding transit, in 15-16. Gavin will update you on the investments we're making to achieve that goal. So over to you now, Gavin.
Good morning. As usual, I'm going to take you through the line of business performance line by line. But given it's the full year, I also want to give you an update on how we're doing against our strategic priorities. But overall, I wanted to give you some highlights for the year to start with. It has been a groundbreaking year for BT, there's no question about that. We've delivered on the numbers, particularly on the free cash flow, and it's this strong financial discipline that has allowed us to make the investment decisions that are giving us the platform for growth. In particular, there are three that I'd like to call out. The planned acquisition of EE is clearly going to be transformational for the group, and subject to getting merger control clearance, which we're confident it will do, it will allow us to create the leading converged UK communications player. Secondly, the new Premier League rights that we acquired earlier in the year. We're very happy with the outcome there. We were financially disciplined in terms of what we went for, and that gives us clarity going forward. And then finally, our vision for the next generation of broadband, the ultra-fast broadband vision that we set out earlier in the year as well. This has allowed us to really set a roadmap to meet the demand for broadband, not just over the next couple of years, but over the next decade. So that's, I guess, the highlights of the year. In terms of the lines of business performance, the overall takeaway is evident growth in each line of business driven by strong cost transformation performance and giving us that platform for growth. So as usual, I'll start with global services. At a headline level, revenues and on an underlying basis, ex-transit, are down 6%. I think it's fair to say the public sector headwinds that we called out at the beginning of the year were stronger than we anticipated, and they weren't fully offset by the growth in Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, which is up 9%, very healthy, but not enough to compensate. In terms of the EBITDA performance, that's strong, up 18% ex-FX, and that reflects a really strong performance in terms of our cost transformation, which is up in terms of delivery 10% year-on-year. From a cash perspective, cash flow was $349 million for the year. That's down, but it reflects $120 million in terms of the payments that we called out this time last year and early receipts in Q4. So that was the main component of the £150 million difference from this time last year. And then in terms of the order intake, a pretty strong year overall, down marginally overall at 7%, but the mix was stronger in terms of new and growth within that. There are fewer renewals, and so we're pretty pleased with that overall. Some pretty big deals in the last quarter, including a big deal with Dixon's Carphone for the whole of their UK network, another deal with Kimberly-Clark around cloud computing, and of course the recently announced ABB deal to give them the network coverage across over 100 countries across the world for them. So moving on to BT Business. The takeaway here is continued EBITDA growth driven by strong cost discipline. In terms of the revenues, the trends are pretty similar to previous quarters. Revenues at ex-transit are down 1% on an underlying basis. And this trend in the market of customers moving away from traditional voice to VoIP is continuing. You can see that in the voice numbers, down 9% year-on-year. But we're seeing the other side of the equation, Our data and networking revenues are up 5%, and fiber up in particular adds up 58% year on year. EBITDA is up 6% across the year. Again, this is due to strong cost discipline across the business, with underlying costs down 4%. Cash flow was strong overall, up 9% across the year. And the order intake was pretty good as well. So it's broadly level across the year, 2.1 billion, and some strong deals to announce in Q4, particularly a deal with Primark and one with Short Trust in the charitable sector. Moving on to consumer. The takeaway here is consumer is continuing to deliver top and bottom line growth, and this is the fifth consecutive quarter that we've been able to do that. Revenues are up 3% in the quarter, driven by a particularly strong performance on broadband and TV behind our investment in BT Sport, as was mentioned earlier. Coupled with strong cost transformation, this means that EBITDA for the year is up 24%, but probably more importantly, it's up against 2 years ago, which was the year before the BT Sport investment. We're up 7% versus 2 years ago. So I think that demonstrates the investment in sport has worked for us, and it has driven the top and bottom line. In terms of cash flow, a very strong cash flow performance in the consumer business, up 72% year on year. That's in spite of making the UEFA deposit for Champions League, which obviously comes in this year, driven by the strong EBITDA performance. But I think it demonstrates that the consumer business is more than capable of paying for its own investment in terms of mobility and rights to fund its business model. Operationally, you can still see the benefit of sports. Line losses, 61,000 within the quarter, in line with Q3, and a very strong performance in terms of broadband, with share at almost 50% of the market, just shy of that within the quarter. Number one in terms of market net adds for the seventh consecutive quarter, and a real standout performance on fibre, a record quarter in fibre in the business, 266,000 fibre adds, the majority of them taking our higher priced options. So we're seeing the mix get a little richer in that area. And it is worth noting that now 39% of our customer base, our broadband customer base, are on fibre. So it is really becoming much more of a mass market product. Moving on to BT Wholesale. And the summary here is we can see the headwinds easing, even if you take out the impact of the ladder pricing. So the top line, underlying revenues are up 3%. If you back out that impact of ladder pricing that Tony talked about earlier, we can see that the underlying picture is improving. It's around 3 to 4% down year on year, improvement on the trend of the previous few quarters. We're continuing to see growth in IP services, up 25% year on year, and that is the real growth engine for wholesale moving forward. Underlying operating costs are down 2%. SG&A in particular is worth calling out. That's down 28% in BT Wholesale, which leaves us with EBITDA up 14% in the quarter, again reflecting the impact of ladder pricing. The order intake is good, again across the year, I think is very strong. We had a big re-sign within the quarter, so if you look at the year as a whole, the order book is roughly what it was 12 months ago, so we're pretty pleased with that progress. And then finally, Openreach. And in summary, the real standout performance here is the fibre performance. Within the operating, the financial metrics is a very stable performance. Revenues flat. If you take out the effects of regulation, that would be up 3% year on year. Fibre in itself is up 42% year on year. At a cost level, our costs are down 2%. That reflects the efficiencies we're driving through the business. But it also takes account of the 2,500 extra engineers that we've hired over the last 12 months to meet the demand. It also reflects, of course, the impact of smaller benefits from redundant copper that Tony talked about earlier. In terms of EBITDA, that leaves us up 1% within the year. Looking at the operating metrics, it was, a terrific quarter in terms of fibre. 455,000 fibre adds within the quarter, which obviously is a record for us. That's up 31% year on year. The physical line base in total was very strong, both within the quarter but importantly, across the year as a whole, 215,000 physical lines added to the network across the year, which, from what we can see, is a record and reflects the growth in new housing. And we're also seeing the growth on the business side behind Ethernet, and Ethernet sites increasing across the year as a whole. So that was a whistle-stop tour through the line of business performance. I want to move on and talk more about the strategic priorities we have across the business. This is a slide that I talked about last year and I referred to in most of our presentations. It sets out our strategy on one slide. I'm going to talk about the five growth areas in more detail, but I wanted to start with an update on service. As I made the point this time last year, getting to superior customer service is a key priority for us across the business. And we recognize we're not there today, but we're absolutely determined to get there. In terms of RST, which is the key metric we use to define how much progress we're making on service, there's been a significant improvement across the board in all lines of business in the last 12 months. And across the group, it improved 4.7 percentage points. That's over three times what it did last year. And you can see the benefit coming through in a number of the operating metrics as well. Of course, we've hired more people to work on the business, they're to serve customers in a more timely way, both in terms of engineers and contact center advisors. We're much faster at bringing products to our customers, so we've seen the speed of delivery improve significantly in global services. Complaints are down, both in business and consumer. And as I mentioned earlier, Ofcom met every single one of its 60 service standards that were defined as part of the fixed access market review. We're not satisfied with that. We're going to be continuing to focus on this going forward, and we're beginning to see the investments that we've been putting down in the last year begin to bear fruit. And they focus on five key areas. First of all, acting on insights, and this is things like journey analytics, where we can track customers as they go through the business, regardless of where they touch the organization, so that if something is going wrong, we can make an intervention earlier in the process. Keeping customers connected, so we've been proactively investing in proactive repairs across the network to ensure there are fewer faults. We've been investing in systems and tools, things like engineer.com, where you, as a customer, you can track where your engineer is so you can anticipate their arrival, but also investments on the consumer side where customers can track their order on our system. Improving our working end-to-end, as I mentioned earlier, and it's important, I think, just to mention supporting our people as well. We put a lot of investment into training and new operating models to get better single-point accountability and ownership for the customer issue, and we're beginning to see that coming through in the operating metrics, particularly one contact resolution, which is up significantly across the board. One thing we talk about with service is service and cost transformation for us work hand in hand. It is not a compromise between the two. And there's one thing I wanted to just give you a quick demonstration of that is this, which is a cabinet, in case you didn't recognize it. On the left-hand side, our legacy cabinet, and on the right-hand side, our next-generation cabinet. And it won't be a huge surprise to you to realize that the one on the right-hand side has fewer faults, and typically 35,000 faults are going to be saved this year on this type of cabinet alone. But it's easier to install, there are fewer components, and of course it's something to cost us at the same time, but it will mean that service is better at the same time. And this is a perfect example of the sort of thing we look for across the business, so that you can combine service and cost transformation at the same time. Okay. I want to move on and talk about the growth priorities, starting with fibre. And as Mike said, this is the single most important investment we've made across the business over the last 5 years. And it is going well. So we've now passed 22 million premises across the UK. That's over three quarters of the UK in total. And we're working with government to get to reach 95% of the UK. And that's making good progress through the both BDUK and increasingly the STEP contracts which we're signing up. In terms of the number of premises connected, there are 4.2 million Openreach premises connected. That's up 50% year on year. It's 19% of homes passed. And importantly, 1.2 million of those are CP providers apart from BT Consumer, PlusNet and BT Business. And that is doubled year on year. So it's doing what we wanted it to do as an investment. It is an investment for the whole of the market. We designed this so all service providers would pick it up and sell it. Looking ahead, the GFAS trials that we've talked about start in the summer. We've announced a trial in Gosford, in the northeast, and in Cambridgeshire, in Huntington. And if those are successful, we'll be rolling out GFAS across 16-17. We set out a vision that where we believe we can get GFAS and speeds of up to half a gigabit to the vast majority of the UK within the next 10 years. And if customers want more than that, we'll be offering a service that offers up to a gigabit on a fiber to the premise on demand basis. And content. And TV and content complement fiber beautifully. So what we see is that customers who take BT Infinity from us and BT TV from us are twice as likely to recommend our services as those who take our copper services. And so they work beautifully together. We've made good progress on BT TV over the last 12 months. We've added 52,000 customers in the last quarter. Growth across the year is 14%. We added a number of new services over the last 12 months. We added Netflix, which we've bundled into our proposition. Two new set-top boxes, one with a hard drive, one without, both more responsive and with faster channel change, which is one of the key things customers look for. We added TV everywhere capability, so customers can watch it on multiple devices and in multi-rooms. And we were first in market with buy-to-keep on movies and then with box sets. So we're really innovating on the content layer as well. And of course, after a lot of trying, we've got Sky Sports 1 and 2 on NewView, which is an important part of the overall proposition. And then on the sports side of things, sports has continued, as we mentioned earlier, it's continued to be a key driver in the consumer business. So the base has grown quarter after quarter on every single platform. We've now got 3.3 million direct customers, 5.2 million if you include the wholesale deals that we have in place. The viewing figures are good and improving. So the average daily audience over the last 12 months is up 15%. Across Premier League games, it's up 10%. The FA Cup has been extremely successful. Viewing is up 35% year on year. And in summary, we've had over 26 matches with over a million viewers at peak. And that was 18 this time last year. And we're not stopping now. As you know, we've got a number of new initiatives in the content arena coming through over the next few months, particularly the exclusive right to broadcast Champions League and Europa League from this summer, and that will significantly add to the overall number of Premier League games or games featuring Premier League teams that we're able to offer on the channel, as the chart can demonstrate. We were very happy with the outcome of the Premier League auction. We got four more games, gone from 38 to 42, but we got it at a very sensible price. It works out at around 6% a year inflation, which is very manageable. And importantly, I think we've got a much better slot to broadcast to. So the audience you can broadcast at the evening slot on a Saturday, which is the one we've got, is around twice that you can shoot for at the lunchtime slot, which is what we've got at the moment. So we're very happy about that. And then finally, we announced an extension of our rugby deal with the Aviva Premiership rugby competition, and that's been extended now till 2021. So we've got real certainty on our key sports moving forward. Moving on to talk about mobility and future voice. And this has been, in many ways, probably the biggest news of the last 12 months. I want to start, first of all, talking about our existing organic plans. And they have progressed both on the business and consumer side. So on business, we've added 4G plans to our business propositions. We're now available across all 20 handsets, top 20 handsets in the business market, and of course we launched one phone. And then in the consumer space, in the last few weeks, we launched our first propositions. It's our first step in the journey. There are three SIM-only propositions, You get a discount if you're a BT broadband customer, and they're doing very well. Very limited marketing behind them. We've already got 50,000 customers signed up for them. There's clearly a demand for this. But the EE acquisition is going to be the big change, and I was delighted that the shareholders gave us a strong endorsement last week. We're moving on to the CMA and the merger control process, and we step forward into this very confident that this is a very good deal, both in terms of what's in it for the shareholders, but also in terms of customers and competition. And we're very confident in terms of being able to get to an agreement. It's a phase one. It'll pass, hopefully, and we'll complete by the 30th of September, and that is our intention. But if it goes to phase two, it'll be 31st of March next year. What it'll give us is real capability. It will allow us to combine the best fixed network and the best mobile network, give us real scale, and give us the capability to create seamless propositions that work across fixed and mobile. And we think that's what the market really wants. On to UK business markets, and we believe this is a real source of growth going forwards, in spite of some of the difficult conditions at the moment. In terms of what we've got strength in connectivity, be that we've got around 40% share of the line space, about 30% share of broadband, and an increasing share of data and network, and that's what we've got to build from. The market is increasingly moving to VoIP, and we've launched a number of VoIP products over the last 12 months, BT Cloud Phone, BT Cloud Voice, and if you want mobility with it, BT One Phone, all of which are really strengthening our offer to the customer. We'll be adding bundling capability to our systems this year, because we see that as a key trend in this market as well. You know, customers are looking for integrated solutions rather than point-to-point propositions from us. And we'll be increasingly adding our IT services capability to that same stack. That's really important as well. So that is a market where we've got 6% market share. We're increasingly moving that business towards services away from hardware where the margins are better, but it's fundamental to our proposition going forward. And then finally, in leading global companies. As you can see from the logos on the right-hand side of the slide here, BT is the company that's trusted by many of the world's biggest brands to manage their networks in particular. Growth in the high-growth regions that we've talked about has been good across the last 12 months, up 9% year-on-year, and we've been adding, extending our existing capabilities to ensure that customers don't get a compromised service as they move and grow in these markets. In addition, we've been extending our network, adding Ethernet Connect points over the year, 10 new countries, and we've been adding 10 new IP Connect points of presence as well. On top of that, we've been launching new products, particularly in the security and conferencing space, and we've also been looking at improving our proposition in the financial market area, which is one of the verticals we're focused on. So we've got a new turret, a touchscreen turret that we've launched in the last 12 months, which is very important given that one in three of the world's traders use a BT turret. We've got to make sure that those products remain competitive going forward. So, in summary, we've delivered the outlook, we've delivered the numbers, particularly in terms of our cash flow. We've made good progress on cost transformation, seeing an improving picture in terms of customer service, and it is this financial strength that allows us to invest in the things that are going to drive growth in the future of the business. And in particular, we believe that the EE acquisition will put us in a position to create the leading UK converged communications provider. And that, we believe, is a very strong platform for growth. So I'm now going to open up for questions. And I'll sit down first before I finish. Usual rules apply. You can wait for the mic to arrive. Introduce yourself, and one question each, please. And we will start at the back with Paul.
Thank you. It's Paul Sidney, Credit Suisse. And you saw a material pickup in both retail and wholesale fiber ads in the quarter. I was just wondering, What's really driving this pickup? Is there any change in household behavior that's meaning that customers need the higher speed? Thank you.
I'm going to add some of my some help from my beautiful assistants in the front row, and then perhaps I'll add a comment at the end. So John, do you want to talk about the downstream part of the business here?
Yes, what we can see is that the BD UK programme in particular is taking fibre to rural parts of the UK, and typically the copper speeds there and tend to be slightly slower, and the demand for our services is very strong in fact actually, so that's definitely a factor. I think also and the government's advertising campaign probably had some impact in the quarter as well, and that started just before quarter, just before Christmas. But generally, this is part of an ongoing and consistent trend for consumers to want faster broadband more and more, and you can see that in the bandwidth and the usage and trends as well. So it's underlying consumer demand, but then we're seeing increased competition among our CPs as well, so there's a sort of layer on top of that. But I think if you play those both in together, that's what's driven the acceleration in the quarter.
Just a very quick follow-on. Are most of the customers still going on the higher-end fiber products?
Yes. So they are choosing the higher speed options that we offer.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, James Cox from New Street Research. I just one question probably for Tony, which is on the one of the big changes that seemed to occur in the financials in the fourth quarter was the change in capitalised labour that seemed to move up by around £100 million. Could you help give us guidance on what's in the 15-16 guidance for that? Are you expecting the £350 million run rate for each quarter to continue for this upcoming year, or does that drop back again?
Okay, it's worth probably reflecting what's happened on those work capitalised. If I look at it in terms of the overall capital spend, it's broadly flat, within £20 million increase in the year. The overall capitalised in the year has gone up by about £148 million. And when you look at that increase, you've got to understand it's actually gone up more in the second half of the year than the first half of the year. So the important point is the level of capitalisation is broadly the same. The mix of what is being capitalised has changed. With the increase of the level of insourcing we do, the increased amount of BD UK activity we have, which is more complex. I think the important point here is the capital cost of that work gets shown, the gross cost gets shown under own work capitalised. The rebate we get back from BD UK gets shown elsewhere. So effectively, you've got an inflation in relation to the own work capitalised. I think it's also worth reflecting the Q4 numbers include an adjustment compared with Q3. Which means the half year is intact, but the Q4 number is slightly inflated when compared to Q3 because of that. And the other side of that entry appears on other.
Somebody should fall next year?
Well, I think it depends on very much, you know, we're not going to give guidance on individual lines, but I think what you should reflect is the fact that the more BD UK work we get, the more inflated that number is. The more insourcing activity we do, the bigger that number becomes. The more we do in terms of new sites and Ethernet rollout, where the mix is different, the bigger that number comes. Very good.
Nick.
Yeah, morning. It's Nick Lyle from SaltGen. Can I ask on fibre regulation, please, Gavin? And firstly, any progress on your investigating your options on the margin squeeze test after Ofcom's comment? And also with GFAST, you talked about trial starting, so any progress on GFAST regulation as well?
We are continuing to consider options on the margin squeeze test. We believe it is unjust, as I've made the point in this venue before. We think it is wrong, and it doesn't really reflect the fact that we're the challenger in the sport market trying to invest, and that this is going to really restrict that going forwards, which is not a good outcome for the market. It's not, I think, the intended outcome that Ofcom are trying to create. So we remain very, very unhappy about it. We're considering our options. We've got a few more weeks before we would have to make an appeal. We'll take that time, and we'll announce it at the time. obviously. In terms of GFAST, the point we've made all along, and it was very much part of Mike's opening, you know, we're prepared to make these big investments as a company. The investment in Superfast back in 2009 was a big call. You know, putting down £2.5 billion in the middle of what was going to be a pretty nasty recession. You know, nobody else was putting that sort of money down. And you know, fast forward to today, and we still haven't recovered the money. I mean, it's, as we've made the point here many times, it's a double-digit year payback. And whilst it's been absolutely right for the business, I think it's been great for the country as a whole. We need to ensure that shareholders get a fair return as well. And that was very much part of the principle that we agreed with Ofcom in 2009. It was the fair debt principle, that in order to encourage private investment, there has to be the ability to make a fair return going forward. So in discussing this next generation of investment with Ofcom, and indeed with politicians as well, we've been reiterating that point. We need a stable regulatory environment. We need the confidence that we'll be able to make a fair return on it. But if we do get those sorts of conditions, we're prepared to go again and invest on behalf not just of our own downstream customers, but invest in an open way that all service providers can benefit from. And that's exactly what the country needs to stay ahead in a digital world. You know, we are a very digital economy, digitally evolved economy, arguably the highest in the world, and that really demands an infrastructure that can keep up with that. And we believe the best way of doing that is through the model we have around functional separation today, because it allows us to make these sort of big investment decisions, which I think in a structurally separated world you wouldn't. Okay. Next,
yeah. Hi, Cyril from Bank of America. Just on mobile, I mean, your slide showed the launch of the MVNO. I mean, the carriers have certainly got quite a lot of attention, and your initial ads have been very strong. How do you balance that in a very fast start with the potential spin down of customers on EE when they, you know, eventually look at the quality they're offering? And you know, potentially getting a much lower price than the 25 odd million customers that you've had so far.
John, do you want to say anything else?
Yes, I mean, and so far the ads are encouraging, but the marketing hasn't really started. And key bit of feedback that we've taken on board from our customers is they expect to hear first from us about the best offers, and as existing customers, they expect to get the best deals, and that's what we've done. And to give our existing customers some kind of a bonus for being loyal to us. And in terms of our pricing in the marketplace, the price for a 4G service that contains sort of a relatively modest amount of data is broadly very similar in terms of the tariff that EE currently offer to our standard deal. They're basically the same, so the figures are it's £9.99 for 250 megabits from the EE, and it's kind of £10 for our bottom tariff for non-BT customers. So it's pretty much the same. Therefore, I think it's quite right for us to give a discount to existing customers.
I think we're alive to the issue. Clearly, our approach to the market with the prospect of owning EE is going to be different from the way we would have tackled it if we hadn't. So we recognise that. But you know, we don't set the pricing in the market. You know, the market sets it, and we must remain competitive. And it's clear that other players are going to come into this market, be it Sky, be it Vodafone in terms of their entry into TV. And we've got to make sure that we're able to compete. Steve.
Hi, Steve Malcolm from RT Research. I guess since we last spoke, we've had the news from Virgin that they're going to expand past 4 million homes. Now, you and John have a lot of cable experience. Now, those 4 million homes are exclusively where they take either broadband or telephony BT homes, whether on a wholesale or retail level. You over-index there, obviously, on a retail level. Can you just share some thoughts on, you know, your thoughts on the credibility of their plans and getting to 40% within 3 years? You know, how you maybe change your strategy around price, around product, accelerating Gito fast, possibly your life, to, you know, to defend yourself against that incursion and just generally, you know, why you think it won't have a big impact on your business?
Well, we do have a lot of cable experience. It's not just John and me, but of course Graham has a lot of cable experience as well, and we'll be using that, bringing that to bear in terms of how we defend our business against it. It is an ambitious plan. I have to admire that, no question about that. 4 million homes in 5 years, 40% penetration, I mean, that is bullish, I would say. But we will take it extreme. In fact, we're already taking it very seriously. I think the reason I think it will be challenging is, if I get back to my own experience in cable, cable built up its customer base in the 90s, franchise by franchise, when the deal was cheap phone calls versus BT. It was 25% saving versus BT, and throw into an analog TV at the same time, and they were up against an analog satellite proposition for Sky. There was then the big cleanup of all the franchises, the consolidation into two players and one player, and then the move to upgrade with broadband and in particular. The base itself has not grown dramatically since then. It's nipped and tucked a little bit, but it hasn't had a huge change. So in terms of the day-to-day competitiveness of what they offer today, I think they will find it a much harder market to go in and win 40% market share than they did in the 90s. Clearly, we're going to fight hard in terms of super-fast broadband and ultra-fast broadband. That's where we will point our early deployments of G-Fast to make sure we've got our best products there. We'll continue to upgrade on the TV front, but to make the economics work, they'll need a lot of Sky customers with ARPUs of £500-600 a year to make the economics work. So it's not just us that will be in a defensive mode. So I think there are a number of different challenges, and we're prepared for the fight. I don't know, John, do you want to add any comment?
The point I would make is just in terms of the actual dynamics in the market today, Virgin has been consistently, pretty much consistently out-competed for the last several quarters in terms of the super-fast marketplace. And so sort of, I think that reflects the relative strength of our proposition.
Because I sold on the retail level 4-1, wholesale level 6-1 last quarter.
It's true. I mean, we don't declare it, but it is significantly lower for a fibre customer than it is a copper customer. Significantly lower.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen Howard, HSBC. Another question on regulation. We've obviously heard some interesting ideas from your rivals about structural separation of late. To my mind, you know, pretty much out of shutdown UK network investment for 3 to 5 years. But do you feel that some of your rivals have stolen the agenda here? I just invite you to use this platform to lay out what Ofcom's review should actually focus on, what it should be looking at in terms of deregulation, and whether, for instance, given this vibrant infrastructure-based competitive market we've just been discussing, should you be regulated when you're competing down the same street with Virgin Media in a 2 megabit per second plus fibre-based platforms?
I think Mike has some strong views he'd like to share.
In a mild way. No, look, I think firstly, you know, this is a very complex area, and we are very, very convinced of what we've done, why we've done it, the benefits to the country, the benefits to competition, and the benefits to our shareholders. And we believe that's a very, very strong proposition. It is complex, And we are paying a lot of attention to the noise that's in the system that is there. And we can't ignore that noise because you always have the risk of a political reaction to this. And therefore, I think, you know, we think a lot of expatriates that we know that are ill-informed, short-sighted, and self-serving. In fact, they're probably not self-serving. They don't quite realize that. So we need to engage in this debate very strongly. We're very much engaged in simplifying the reasons why we invested, the benefits to the country, the benefits to competition, and we'll continue to do that because of the arguments that are very strong indeed as to what we've done, the reasons I mentioned and Gavin's has mentioned in his presentation. So, you know, we're confident about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and the implications. We're very engaged, not just at the sort of, if you will, the technical level, but we're also engaged at the political level to ensure there's a clear understanding of what this is about, and we continue to invest. And we mustn't forget, you know, that in terms of competition for the UK, the low productivity we're facing, you know, the problem of domination of London, actually the rollout of what we're doing, the Superfast Broadband, is critical. And in a way, we're also very concerned that we must make these investments because, you know, people have, you know, it's a political issue that people aren't getting it quickly enough, fast enough, you know, and there's only so fast that we can go. And we've done a lot already. So we've got to work on these issues to make sure that the total proposition is seen as something that's very important for the country and as well as for our shareholders. So that's, I think we're very, very alert to that. On Ofcom, I would say two things. When you compare with some other regulators I've dealt with, Ofcom is very professional. You know, we've had a very good relationship with Ofcom. We don't always agree with them, they don't always agree with us, but it's been a sensible relationship with Ofcom. Therefore, we continue to make the arguments with them. We expect them to live up to the commitments they made to us in 2009, and we expect that to go on in a constructive and sensible way, and we'll be engaged there in making these points very strongly, and we have no reason to believe that our arguments would fail. I mean, that's where
you make your points very well, Mike. I mean, it should be remembered that Ofcom, I think, did a lot of cool where we have got to today. You know, we've got the highest coverage in Europe, lowest prices, both at a wholesale and a retail level. We've got the widest, as I said, the widest coverage. And that is, we've gone from being the laggard to the leader across Europe based on Ofcom's own figures. So I think the case is, you know, the model is working. Don't break it. It would be our argument. If you go back to 2009 and look at the choice we faced as a board back then, if we'd have been a separated, structurally separated business, and we'd been making the decision for Openreach, the investment decision would be based on a 20-year payback. I just don't honestly think we'd have made the call in those conditions. What you benefit from is, if you have the functionally separated model, is that you can take investments. If you regulate it properly, you can take investments and look at it across the whole. And that means that an investment which would have not got out of the blocks otherwise had something that a degree of reasonableness about it. And as we've said, it's double digit, but it's just about doable. And it's proven to be the right thing to do. So, you know, I think the case is very strong, and indeed the case of full structural separation is at best unproven, and certainly the one example that has gone that far has not been a runaway success.
But you've got a wish list beyond this?
Well, I think to your point, there is a case, and it's in the brief from Ofcom, which is they should be looking at ways of reducing regulation. The point you make around Virgin being a very credible competitor, it feels confident that it can extend its network in the UK and make a £3 billion investment, does not suggest the market that is somehow being starved of competition.
I think it's worth making the point too that we are 10 years or so in. There are 179 undertakings. The market is dramatically more competitive. Just over the unbundled line, what, 7 million or something, compared to the 1.5 million target. Look at the things that we've had to do. We had one hand tied behind our back for several years, you know, including not being able to bundle, not being able to get access to Sky Sports content. So a number of things that we've had to really fight through in order to create a much more competitive environment for everybody has required a lot of courage and investment from us to do that. And we've got to make those arguments. And I hope that Ofcom will stand back, as they've said, and look at the 179 undertakings and say, well, actually, you know, how can we simplify this in everyone's interest today, because so much has changed since then. And frankly, to Ofcom's credit, you know, to to the benefit, you know, much stronger and to the benefit of the UK PLC than they would have expected 10 years ago.
Very good. Let's move on and go to John and then Barry.
Thank you. It's John Corrigus from Stifel. Good morning. A number question, probably for Tony. I'm trying to understand what the main constituents of the 180 million regulatory headwind for Openreach were in FY15, and how that total number is likely to change in FY16, please.
Okay. I think, John, in generic terms, we will expect to see materially less regulation in Openreach next year. Why don't we give you the breakdown after the results? We can give you the analysis of that 180 in terms of what we've already declared.
Do you mind adding something more to the word material so we can understand a little bit more what that means?
Well, it will be less than half that. It roughly speaking, it'll be around about a third that impact.
A third.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. Thibaut Duconci from Raymond James. Two questions from my side. First on cost savings. If I remember well, you previously identified a further £1 billion of cost savings. So could you update us on what has been achieved so far and what is left to expect in the future? And second on CapEx. Looking at other telecom companies, we've seen an increase on in CapEx in order to support and accelerate fiber growth. So my question is, should we expect a similar move from BT in the future? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, in terms of cost transformation, we gave a guidance of saying that there'll be over £1 billion. There'll still be over £1 billion, despite what we've done this year. So I expect to see material savings both next year and the year after. In relation to the capital guidance, what I'm saying now is no different to what I said last quarter. We have, if you look at the runway of where we are in terms of capital, broadly speaking, that runway will stay the same. It might oscillate a little bit year on year. If we choose to, for example, accelerate what we do in GFAS, some may come down, but it'll even itself out if I look over the period over the next 5-6 years. The key, though, is if we want to accelerate something, it might get up a little bit more in that particular year or 2 years.
Good morning. It's Jerry Dallas from Jefferies. Question on revenue trends, please. The underlying revenue trend at group level was a little bit softer in the second half of last year, but you're confidently guiding for a return to growth this year. How rapidly do you expect to return to growth through the quarters, and what do you think will be the main drivers playing through in the course of next year?
I mean, the key drivers are going to be the Champions League launch in consumer, organic plans in mobile, both of which are going to be positive effects going forwards, and the headwinds will reduce year on year. So I've talked, for example, about the public sector, the change in buying in the public sector, and that year on year we believe is going to be less. For example, regulation, the impact of regulation is going to be less going forward. So it's a combination of the two. In terms of timing, we don't give sort of quarter-by-quarter guidance on it, but clearly we need the trend to improve. Very good. Yes.
Morning, it's Michael Bishop from RBC. I'm following on from that slightly. When you consider the raft of price increases we've seen from your competitors, it feels like they've almost lapped you now. And a lot of those price increases are focused on TV. Your proposition looks very good value, and you're adding more value to the bundle with mobile. You know, how much of your revenue guidance assumes further price inflation across the bundle? And leading on from that, do you think there's scope to potentially increase TV pricing outside of the Champions League proposition? Thanks.
I think on pricing, we need to be cautious going forward. I mean, getting pricing, accelerating pricing too far ahead of inflation is not a great place to be. Our model is increasingly focused on growing larger use per customer as opposed to depending on pricing. So there is some pricing in the plan going forward, but we want to ensure that our products are competitively priced, and that I'd rather see the growth coming out of RGUs than is there anything you wanted to add, John?
I'd like to sign you off, first of all. And then, second, I would say that in terms of our prospects for PV, as Gavin said, a relatively small proportion of our overall customer base currently subscribe to the TV service that we have today. So the big opportunity is in volume. Having said that, it's extremely good value and extremely cheap, actually. And as the service gets better and better, as you saw on the chart there, through the innovations that we've launched, I think there is a chance to grow the ARPU as well. So I think the opportunity is in both directions, but first it's about volume.
Thank you, Michael. Simon. And then we'll walk down this middle bit here.
Thank you very much. It's Simon Reading from Citigroup. My question is on BD UK and how the income receipts from them is reflected in the account. And also if you could comment on, I believe that if you trigger certain market share thresholds in the subsidised areas in stages, you become liable to rebate some of the subsidy. I wondered how much that could be when you might start to see that happen. How it would be reflected in the accounts, and voila, and where it's triggered, I guess, yeah.
Okay, so where we are now, Simon, is that we've got an estimate in the accounts in relation to the level of take-up that we take. We're constantly reviewing that, and when we review it next time round, it may well be that we need to make a change, but we have a provision in the accounts associated with what we think the likely take-up is going to be. So, effectively, we're providing. If the take-up materially exceeds that, we'll need to make a provision associated with that. I don't expect, but from where we are now, this is not a number like hundreds of millions of pounds. If we need to do something, it may be tens of millions of pounds. But the contrast to that, remember, is the take-up will be in excess of what we're expecting, which will benefit us in terms of revenue, cash, and EBITDA. In relation to where we show this rebate, it's not shown underneath the traditional expenditure heading where it's incurred, which is under our labour cost. We show it as a single item, and think it's under operating income. Other income, please.
If it's being netted, if the receipts are being netted through the CapEx, presumably once if you have to pay the provision, that therefore gets netted out of CapEx.
It will do, because that's where the provision is held. But as I said, the key to remember is the take-up would have increased. So if the take-up's increased, our revenue is up, our EBITDA is up, and our cash is up.
And it's also fair to say that it's not necessarily comes back in form of a rebate. It can be, in some examples, and Cornwall is an example, it can be invested back into the network. So it's not necessarily, they don't necessarily want the money back. They might want the money reinvested to extend or upgrade.
But the net impact is you'll still see that number appearing in the CapEx number.
Yeah. Very good. We passed the...
Thanks, Laura Sugarman from UBS. Can you just give a little bit of detail in terms of cash tax going forward? It looks like it's a little bit lower than we might have expected. And what the drivers going forward relative to P&L charging is?
Sure, look, the overall profit will be increasing, the overall rate of tax is going to be moving downward slightly. What we've got though is we would expect that number to drift up slightly from where we ended up this year.
Andrew? And then Morris.
Yes, thank you. Andrew Lee from Goldman Sachs. To just follow on from Paul's question right at the start of the Q&A, talking about the strong KPIs you've had in retail and his thing about the usage element, I just wondered if you could talk about the UK consumer environment in general, if you're seeing that as a tailwind to your business, if we're seeing any kind of any further signs of consumers maybe allocating more of their discretionary income into telcos. And then just secondly, in terms of competition, we saw quite a lot of promotional pricing activity at the back end of last calendar year, and just if you could update on any changes following Sky's Premier League auction activity and their subsequent price rise.
Very good. John?
In terms of the tailwind, I would not want to overstate that. Clearly, there are more people who've got jobs at the moment, and the economy is doing relatively well. Having said that, the growth is very hard fought for, and the marketplace is extremely competitive, and I don't really expect that to change. So I think the one other point of context I would give is that it's true that our services are increasingly vital to customers' lives, and they expect to be connected for more of the time. And the standards that they have, the speed of that connection continue to rise too, and their usage continues to increase very markedly too. So that's very true of broadband. But in terms of the growth area for us, in some ways on top of that is around TV, and the proposition that we offer very much taps into the growth segment in TV, and that's people coming across from preview, from free to air, seeking to pay not 50, 60, 70 pounds a month, but seeking to pay up to £3 more for much more choice, and that's what we offer.
In terms of the promotional activity, it's pretty strong still, isn't it? Anything?
It's very strong. I mean, the stance that we take is very rational and driven by consumer insight. And firstly, it's about sustainability. We've only seen the same behaviours from all of my competitors, and one of them that's your main name list is giving away 32-inch colour TVs for people that sign up at the moment. I would strongly advise you not to take it off, however. Our products are far better. Yeah.
Very good. Morris.
Yeah, hi guys, it's Morris from Barclays. So a question on the sort of long-term penetration of fibre potential. So fibre net adds continue to exceed your but also our expectations. You've in the past talked about the split of fibre adds, which is coming from the new areas, but also the growth you're seeing in some of the older areas. So what's the penetration like now in some of the early fibre areas deployed? And how did it get to where do you think fibre penetration could be in 5 years? Could we be at 10 million homes in 5 years' time?
Tony's keen to make a point here.
Yeah, I think it's that's a couple of points. The first is, if you look at where we are now, on areas such as Northern Ireland and in terms of Cornwall, where we really started rolling out 2009-2010, we reached penetration levels of around about 25%, and that 25% in total. If you look at the areas where we've got since then, you know, we've got, I think, 1,600 exchanges over 20%. So the levels of take-up is materially better, and we're almost, if you look at 19%, we're almost at the business case level we set when we set up this investment. And I think it's an indication that we will exceed where we stand on that business case. But the piece to remember, though, is we're going to have to upgrade the network, and we're going to have to spend money on GFast, which wasn't in the original business case.
I think, there's clearly more demand for it than we envisaged in 2009. Because it wasn't a... it's easy to look at the sort of 20% number and think, oh, that seems fairly conservative. But it was against the benchmarks in terms of what we could look at around the world and the time to market. It was a reasonably challenging assumption. We're clearly going to get beyond that, and there's no question about that. So, a thing I referenced in my presentation was that 39% of our BT consumer base now has fibre. So, you know, that gives you a measure that if all service providers get behind it and it becomes, you know, the standard product, I think it could go a lot further.
Yeah, it's worth re-emphasising that when you look back historically, there was a concern that we were going to spend a lot more money on capital because we were rolling out BDUK. This company in 7, 8 and 8, 9 was spending $3.2 billion. We're spending around about $2.3 billion of service, and we've covered fibre investment. So that's why I'm very confident we can cover the GFast investment in relation to what we do moving forward.
Very good. Thank you. James?
Hi, Andrew Wilson from there. Question on the broadband experience for the consumer. I think Ofcom recently released research that suggested that broadband speed actually is not important for the broadband experience. The speed is about 10 megabits per second today. So I just wanted to, I think they're looking to expand the range of KPIs as well on broadband experience. Just wanted to get your latest view on how speed is as a driver of the purchasing decision, and also how you're able to differentiate, if at all, on the other key bottleneck for web sites, which is in-home equipment, interconnection with content providers, and so on.
So, John, do you want to...
Yes, just to take that point, I think there's no one consumer, so consumers could have different habits and preferences. If you're someone who's very, very into online gaming, to people it matters more to you than someone of whom that's not true. But it's very much the case that more than one factor can affect customers' experience. And so I would call out the upload speed in particular, in terms of being something that's increasingly important to consumers, given the changes in habits that we are seeing. The other points are things like jitter, packet loss, the overall quality of experience, and the marketing claims that we see from our competitors are very much just in terms of those top line speeds. But I think you're quite right in saying that it's the overall experience that really counts. And that's what we're massively focused on optimising and getting right for our customers. And what we can see is taking the basket of measures and the service that we offer is significantly better. It's worth saying that for some of the firms that are very much stressed and the straightforward download speeds, the fact they don't talk about is contention at peak times. And for cable networks in particular, they do contend at peak times very much. And the point you make in terms of equipment in home is also true. And that's why the BT Home Hub contains the latest format of Wi-Fi and smart technology to move between channels to give customers the best experience and to protect against Wi-Fi interference. And it's a combination of all of these things to give you the best experience in total.
But it is clear, I mean, to John's point, the headline speed on a cable network drops in peak times 35%, and that's Ofcom's own conclusion. And so customers feel that. But the one thing I would add to it is we have to build a network that is relevant to how demand is growing in the future. So I think we're very competitive at the moment, but also conscious of the fact that history shows that bandwidth demand grows consistently 30 or 40% a year, year after year, which is why we're putting the investment into GFAS and fibre to the front end of that.
Can I just ask a follow-up for Tony, actually? On working capital, is there any reason why structurally you should be in a negative working capital position for the medium term, or should we expect this year's £220 million drag to drop away at some point?
Yeah, there's no reason why we should continue to be on a negative. It kind of bounces around year on year. I mean, if I look at overall where we are, if I look at cash capex, and I look at the working capital, I look at the other movements, actually it's been helped to contribute to the cash flow growth we've had this year.
Right, I'm going to go to Nick.
Thanks very much. Just a few number checks, really. So obviously, on revenues, there was a slight miss against consensus, but EBITDA was a bit better. And you've got ladder pricing for 30. You've got the capitalization that we already talked about for about 100. You've also got more specific items. And I think historically, specific items were lever costs, rather, were taken into EBITDA in 2012. I'm not sure when they went back out again. And you've got some copper sales as well. So if you add all that together, it's somewhere in excess of $200 million just for Q4 versus where consensus was. And then on another number, if you look at...
don't worry, we will answer that question, even though it wasn't a question.
And if I also look at the investment of $2.5 billion in fibre, if I take that off the Openreach capex for the last 5 or 6 years, which has been roughly flat, that would imply that you should be earning £2.5 billion of EBITDA off a regulated utility with only about £500 million of capex. So that just seems a very, very high return for an SNP utility.
Tony.
Well, sorry, I didn't understand the first part in terms of the question, but in terms of the statement that you made and the accuracy of the statement you made, some points. So in the first instance, the level of copper rebate we got in 14-15 in terms of recoveries was materially less in 13-14. The key point I think to understand is that the consensus number, like for like, we beat consensus by 50, ladder pricing was 30, roughly speaking, 1% of the beat in the quarter was down to trading.
But I don't see any issues in terms of that. In terms of the lever cost, the lever cost payments that we have made in relation to the original guidance has been around about 100 million higher. The reason it's been 100 million higher is we've let more people leave the company. The overall labour costs in the company are 4% less than they were last year. And what that means is that the throughput that we will get into this year allows us to be in a position to make an underlying growth of 3% after taking into account the fact that now we're going to be putting labour costs above the line. But from an analyst perspective, what you've got here is you've got a 4% beat for next year in terms of our outlook. Just to be clear, for 25 quarters, we've met or delivered or exceeded the outlook numbers in relation to our EBITDA. So you've got a 4% uplift in terms of cash flow, and we're also putting in £100 million or so above the line, from below the line, which therefore should filter through into your numbers.
Can I just follow up on the lever costs? Because I think certainly in FY12, the lever costs went back above the line. So when did they go below the line again?
Yeah, the lever costs have been classified as part of the restructuring program since we announced the restructuring program, which is going back a couple of years. I think the key point here is, a number of you said, as far as lever costs are concerned, show the lever costs clearly, you might as well take it above the line, and therefore you don't get involved in the discussions that we're having now about what's below and what's above. We're taking it above the line, effectively means an upgrading number, because you should have had your lever costs and your specific items, I presume.
And in terms of Openreach, so underlying CapEx X fiber is only 500, 600 million?
I think what you've got is you're going to have a mix of capital expenditure in a number of different categories over the years. So you'll have an influx in relation to what's regulated. But the question between what's regulated and what's not regulated is going to vary as regulation rules change in time. I think the key is you look at the overall investment and the overall drivers of the investment, we will be spending more money on Openreach capital, both in terms of BD UK and outside UK.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Right. A bit time for two more. And then Robert had his hand up as well, so yes, and then Robert.
David Mooney from Irvine. What are the current numbers for OneFone and CloudFone?
We don't give specifics, but I don't know whether Graham likes to give a little bit of colour on the demand.
We obviously don't disclose specific numbers, but we're pretty encouraged at all the new propositions we've launched in the last 6 months. It's still relatively early days, but we're seeing quite sizable demand, and actually across a wider segmentation than we had thought when we rolled out some of these products. So we're definitely seeing encouraging signs. We have a much wider and broader portfolio than we had 12 months ago. So we're looking forward to driving that forward over the next 12 months. So quite a positive start.
Very good. And Robert, I think we'll take the last question.
Okay. It's on pricing again, actually. It's a circle back to a previous question. There's a lot of uncertainty about convergence and what that would do to the convergence discounts, and you're already offering one to your customers, TalkTalk followed suit with theirs. There's a lot of uncertainty, but on the fixed line side, it sounds like you're cautious on tariffs. So is that what's baked into Tony's guidance on the growth? So if we saw you raise line rentals, for example, would that be a better outcome than a cautious statement would suggest?
All I can say is, we need to remain competitive in the marketplace. And we're very conscious of that. We're also conscious of the political environment and the fact that inflation is very low. And we've been able to raise prices at the same time, improve the amount of value we've offered customers over the last number of years. And that is a formula that works for us. I think this isn't the time to necessarily break away from that. We don't give guidance in terms of how much pricing we've baked in. Into the outlook, but as I say, the key driver for us is RGU though. That's where we want to drive the volume fundamentally. Tony, did you want to?
Yeah, Rob, I think it's fair to say we have baked in a degree of price inflation,
but obviously we're not going to declare what that is.
Like what you've seen in the last year.
we're not going to know.
You might think
I could possibly comment. All I'm saying is that the level of price inflation we put in, if you look at retail in general lines, what we're putting is not materially different to what any of our competition is putting.
Okay, depends upon Mike. Individually, you might not care, well, you might have lots of care actually about who wins the election tomorrow, but as a corporate, could you divide the political parties according to, you know, whoever's in charge?
I'll give you the CBI view, and tonight might be an interesting night. So we want to put it one way. We've got one party who doesn't like Europe and one party who doesn't like business, so it feels like a great time. You know, on balance, business thinks it can manage more the Europe issues, but we don't like business issues. But you know, I think I've been saying for the last 18 months, the biggest risk to our recovery in all seriousness, which is a low-wage, low-productivity recovery, which requires much more investment in order to improve productivity for sustainable increase in wages, requires an environment that gives that, and the biggest risk is the political uncertainty, and that's what we're seeing. So I think business is very concerned. Markets seem very stable right now, but we're very concerned about the uncertainty of the outcome of today, actually.
And if I can add to you, in terms of the BC perspective on it, we're neutral.
Yeah,
we've got a good relationship with the Conservatives, and the investments on BDUK and the progress we've made on BDK, I think, has demonstrated that. But we've also got a good relationship with the Labour front bench as well. And there are a number of ideas that they're proposing that I think would be very good for the country as a whole. So we're absolutely neutral. We're happy to work with anybody. And on that note, thank you very much.